Welcome back to another episode of The Couch Unplugged. Big football week this week. Champions League is back. We'll get into the Inter Milan Liverpool game in a bit, but first we're going to go through some Serie A games. You know, at the top of the league and at the middle of the league, I guess. So we're going to start with the Inter game because why not? Inter Napoli 1-1. Inter before that had come off a loss in the derby. Now they get a point against Napoli. It is getting really tight at the top of the table. What were your thoughts on kind of what you learned from the game, and especially coming off that big collapse against AC Milan?
Okay, for that match, I needed my coffee, my snacks, and the medics on standby, because that match was of a heart attack proportion. Obviously, in the first half, you had – I can't remember who scored the goal, but
– Insigne penalty, foot, dangerous tackle on Osimhen, and then he scores the penalty, and then – yeah, anyway.
But yeah, they convert the penalty and were able to go one up. Inter for a good chunk of the match had a hard time finishing chances, even though they had a couple of good ones on target, but overall they had a hard time finishing. But in the second half, Inter kicked it up a notch and was able to get a little bit more momentum. And we're able to create more chances. And Dzeko, which was in some of my Inter chats, for getting slack for performing terribly. But it's like one of those scenarios where you can perform terrible, but then he goes and shuts you up by scoring a goal.
So assisted by the Napoli defense. No, you're right. Dzeko was – I love Dzeko. He was awful. He provided almost nothing the entire game. And then, obviously, he – I wouldn't say lucked into the situation, but he benefited from a bad clearance that just kind of came into his foot. But like you said, yeah, Dzeko comes up when you needed him, because you lose that game. It's not a pretty picture.
Yeah, definitely. So then obviously the match ends in a draw. Obviously it's not the result Inter wanted, but it's better than losing like they did in the derby. So, yes, we're now in second place, but it's still very close at the top of the table, as stated. So there is time to get things back in order and move on to get hopefully back up to the top of the table. Obviously, a lot of our major top table teams like Inter Napoli, Inter AC Milan have kind of like blown over for a while. So now we got some easier matches that we should be able to capitalize on. Although the one we got Sassuolo next, and Sassuolo is not a team to be messed with, because they're, even though they've been struggling, were inconsistent and stuff, they're still not a team to take lightly. So it will be a tough match, but I think if Inter are able to fix certain situations, they should have no problem winning their next few.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think it was important, and obviously your next couple of fixtures are favorable. You will have to take a trip to Anfield, but that's not in the league. You know, you look at how they played. I don't know. You know, it would be – this is going to sound strange, but it would make us look – it would make the league not look good if Inter didn't win the league. So it's like they kind of have all this pressure of the reputation of the league to win. And the thing is, you know, Napoli's a good team. AC Milan's a good team. Juventus is a good team, but started too badly that they're not going to have enough time to make up lost ground. And all respect to the other teams, Inter Milan have the best assembled squad in the league by far. So if they were to if they were to not win the league, it would make everyone look bad. And I'm getting a little nervous. Not that I have any desire for Inter Milan to to win the league. But I just think for the league, as well as sort of the story that's been building from the last few years, it would be a conclusion or a, so you know, that looks more reputation comes to Serie A if they win the league. And it's not that, you know, Inter's going to win the league 5-6 years in a row, but considering the team that they have, considering all the pieces that they're in there and considering what they'll add in the summer, they should be winning this league. You know, little concerning because you go in the AC Milan game, you look good at times. You have those moments where you probably should have, you know, propelled yourself better. And then you, Olivier Giroud scores twice. And then, you know, Inter lose that derby for the first time in a long time. Then you're going to this Napoli game. And what I thought I was going to see is a very ambitious, a very aggressive Inter Milan. That wants to sort of make amends. And remember, they got that game in hand, but you never know what's going to happen with a game in hand. That I think it's against Bologna. They're probably going to win that game, but you don't know. So this is why it's important for them to make a statement. And even though Napoli didn't play well, Inter didn't play that well either. Inter probably played better by a bit. Napoli get the penalty and Inter are saved by the end by Dzeko and kind of taking advantage of a Napoli mistake at the back. Everything kind of screams together. And I just didn't see an Inter team that was, I would say it's not determined, but didn't have the aggressive approach I thought they would have. And coming off of that game, that performance, I think there's a little to be concerned about as far as what we're expecting them to do and for them not to bite back. And again, it's no disrespect. I don't like Napoli, but it's no disrespect to Napoli. Anyone that's watched Napoli this season knows their deal. They play like crap and they win. That's how they've gotten points this season. And that's not me being a hater or whatever. It's just the facts of the situation. If you watch the Napoli team this season, that's kind of their MO. They're still getting points. They still find those moments to get those points, but they don't play well in victories most of the time. So because of that, I thought Inter would take more advantage of that. I'm not a disappointment level, but coming off that victory or that loss to AC Milan, how did you feel after the final whistle? I mean, yeah, great. You get a point. That's wonderful. I'd rather get 1 point than no points. But coming off of that game, it's just the performance itself. How did you feel going? I mean, not going into the game, but after the final whistle on the weekend.
I'm trying to find the word. I wasn't really necessarily like disappointed because I mean, a point is a point at the end of the day, but I felt like it was just I'm just going to say one word in Espanol because it's what I kind of feel right now. It's called más o menos, which means so. I mean,
are you concerned though at all with the, okay, because you lose the derby, you scrap a point at the end. Are you concerned about getting that form you had before the derby, after the performance on Sunday? Is basically what I'm asking.
Well, I'm gonna take everything so far this week as a whole, including our performance today. But we'll get into that a little bit more later. But overall, I am kind of concerned, especially since we've lost. What I've noticed is lost that aggressiveness that with the ball and stuff. We've been letting careless mistakes take over that weren't an issue before the Milan match. But some of the issues defensively kind of also showed up. In, I guess I'm trying to remember who we played before Milan.
I think you played like it was a team in the mid table, I think. I don't remember, but it was a mid table team if I have that right.
Yeah, I think so. But I mean, overall, some of the stuff dipped long before the Milan match, which is kind of disappointing. So I mean, I think they need to work on getting that aggressiveness back and just focus on being more tight at the back, which I've noticed there have been issues in that area. But, I mean, overall, it's just one shit show after another right now. But I'm still happy we're 1 point behind our rivals. But I'm freaking hungry. I want my another title, man. I'm hungry for it. So I don't care what these mofos need to do to get back into form, but they better freaking get it done or else I'm going to come over there and kick their butt.
But yeah, it's a good point. But also remember, you've only lost two games in the league this season. That's very good. And though that was against AC Milan last, there have been worse teams. You know, there's other teams that have lost to teams that are beneath themselves as clubs. So I think you're in a good space. They just got to get their head screwed on straight. And again, Inzaghi's done a great job with this team. I think the pieces you have are good. It's more about utilizing them correctly. Not to say there's been incorrect use, but they just need to get – they need to make a big statement in against the Sassuolo game, especially because I think that's at home. Is that home? I think it's at home, right? That game, the next game.
Sassuolo match?
Yeah. Actually, I don't know. Anyway, regardless, I just think they don't. I'm thinking of this in a way. I think it's probably no. It's a home. I think it's a home game because Sassuolo just played at home this weekend. So my guess is that you're playing them at the San Siro. So regardless, home or away, I think they may need to make a big statement in that game to kind of get it back. So if you beat them by 2-3 goals, you know. Lautaro and Dzeko and Alexis Sanchez and Barella all play amazing. And then you'll get the confidence back instilled in yourself and you push forward in the league because you got to win the league. Because AC Milan and Napoli, their teams are not good enough to win this league. Inter have to win the league. It's not even a thing about, if I like Inter or not. They need to win the league because they're the best team by far. I don't want to see another team that's not the best team win the league. Not to say, because a lot of years it's close. This year, if you look at the squads of all the teams, they're the most complete squad. I would say embarrassment. It would be hugely disheartening to see them not win the league just because of what they have available to them. So, yeah, we'll see if they can rebound and get back to motion and see what they can do for the rest of the season. But they need to start picking up more convincing victories rather than having to wait until the end to scrape a point. All right, another one here, mid-table clash between Torino and Venezia. Remember, Venezia is trying to get out of the relegation zone. Torino's kind of been the surprise of the season. Controversy at the end, but what did you make of the 2-1 victory for the newcomers?
I am definitely proud of them because Venezia was like my Serie B team that I was following when they were there. And so I was very happy for them getting this result. Obviously, you had Torino who went one up early on, but Venezia was definitely had the answer like not even like 20 minutes later. So it's one of those situations where you didn't know what was going to happen at that point since they were level and Venezia was right there and was able to capitalize on a second goal and was able to get the 3 points. Definitely proud of them and hopefully they're able to keep this momentum up because I want them to stay in this league for quite a while.
All right. With that being said, Venezia did play pretty well. Torino played better, in my opinion. They did play well. And you can say a team played well, and it'd be a robbery at the same time. Pelotti's late goal. How on earth do you call that offside? Even on the line, it's like his toenail's offsides. Because on the free kick, it's basically lined down the middle, and he has one inch of his foot is across the line. I think in those fine margins – I don't think an offside should be called in that situation because they're just standing there. It's not even like a thing where Man United had six players offsides on a free kick from the weekend. It was like barely offsides, if offsides. And I had to look at that play back three, four, five, six times just to see where this is coming from. Because if you look on the buildup before the kick is taken, maybe he's got an inch of his toe that's offsides and that's it. And then when the play kind of develops, he's not offsides. He's just on side position pretty much throughout the ball, the thing. Torino will then get a point because they scored on that play. Because Valencia played well enough. Torino looked like the better of the two teams. So you can say that, okay, Valencia played a great game. They got an important point or 0.3 points. But I don't know if you can justify it because of the Andrea Belotti goal that, for whatever reason, was not called. So what are your thoughts on that last goal that wasn't called?
Obviously, it was just by the slimmest of margin, so it should have counted. But, I mean, it's just one of them things where they need to really evaluate, like, are you serious? Only a small minuscule is going to be considered offside. I mean, if it was by a more significant margin, like a whole entire foot or something, then that would be justifiable. But for a small minuscule amount, it should have counted. And so I think they got robbed of a point there. But I mean, still, Valencia definitely performed very well. But I do agree that the Belotti goal should have stood.
Yeah, the thing is, the guy on the left side, all the way in the end, the Valencia player, I don't know who it was, if he was tired and needed to stretch, the second the ball was kicked, it would have been onside. Because it is only offsides because he's standing still. If he was in an athletic position, it would have been played onside. That's how I just think – I get it. Offside is offside, no matter what the distance. But in that particular scenario, it seems absurd to call that offsides because no one was moving. And it wasn't like Belotti was standing in front of the offside line. He was lined up with everybody else. His foot just happened to be pointing forwards. And the other guy happened to have his foot tucked in. So the entire situation of how that, you know, the reason that it was called a goal or not a goal had to do with the position of the feet of Belotti and the feet of the other dude. So it just seems like an absurd thing. And again, Valencia, well done. You get 3 points, but it really should have only been 1 point. It helps them, obviously, a bit. Yeah, good for them. They get the points, even though I don't think they should have got three. They're going to be in they have a game in hand against Cagliari. I don't know who that is again, who they'll play there. I'm guessing they won't win just because they're not getting points every week. But between Cagliari and Valencia, I think Cagliari's got the better team. So I'd give them the edge, but it was an important 3 points regardless. But what I fear is I don't want their safety to come down to an absurd decision like that. And that's my issue with it rather than – because nothing against Valencia. But if we look back this season, it better not come down to that amount of points because of a refereeing decision. I'm not a blame the referee guy. There's enough of those crybabies on the internet and on Twitter. But this was so small margins, I thought it was a strange thing to see. All right, a big clash for Champions League. We saw Atlanta Juventus, the tough battle between two teams, a game that could have gone either way, another game that was that Juventus rescues a point at the death. What are your thoughts between those? And then what? Yeah, what? Sorry, what were your thoughts on that? On those two locking horns?
Oh my gosh, that match was intense. Both of these teams were really going at each other's throats throughout the whole entire match. You had Atalanta going up 1-0 with a goal from Malinovsky.
How great was that goal, though? Go ahead. Sorry.
That was an amazing goal. I would call it one of those orgasmic proportions goal, but just low key though.
I think it's probably one of the goals of the season. There have been a few out of the catalog, but that's, I don't know. The Ukrainian has a fucking rocket launcher on his foot. It was so precisely put too. It was with power and pace and accuracy. It was, what a hit.
I mean, it was absolutely beautiful. And then it looked like Juventus was having difficulty finishing their chances, but of course you had what was his name? Daniello?
Yeah.
Who was able to find the back of the net from a short distance, and they salvage a point in stoppage time. But that match overall was back and forth. It was very exciting. And I mean, this is a really toughly contested match because of what's at stake, a spot in the Champions League. But, I mean, goodness, that was a great match.
Yeah, amazing. Back and forth a bit. And, you know, I don't think it even was missed chances, really. It was just good goalkeeping. Because the quality of the chances were spectacular. Even the ones that didn't go in, I thought – you know, Dybala had a few chances, so did Vlahovic. And then on the other hand, I mean, man, this one has to kick Atalanta, though, because if Hans Hatebor doesn't hit the bar, I mean, they get the point, they get maximum points there. And it was so close to going to the back of the net, and it goes a little high and hits off the crossbar. And I know that there's no more devastating feeling in a game like this to hit the bar in a crucial game where you're winning the game. And then obviously Juventus come back and get a point. And again, Juventus are flying now. They had that great performance from last week against a strong Verona side. They were able to hold off Sassuolo in the Coppa Italia. And then, you know, you see this performance. Getting a late point is good as well. And even though I felt like they probably felt that they should have got more because they did have their chances. And they're continuing to climb and climb and climb for the Champions League. They're in the Champions League spot. And I think it's going to be difficult to knock them off the step. We'll see. They'll have some big games down the stretch. And we'll see how they're able – you know, to handle those types of situations, but they look like they're in a good they're in a good rhythm together, and they continue to play well. And if you look at the Coppa Italia and what we have on the plate, they have to feel confident even going into that situation, because if they get to the final, that, you know, you never know what can happen. And you know, they're playing outstanding. They're really playing outstanding. They're almost as good as their women's team, which is great. I'm just kidding. Their women's team is actually fucking amazing. Because you know, Juventus has been up and down this season, but no, they've been great. Atalanta, you sense that they're struggling a bit without Zapata, as you would expect. But I still think they're going to vibe for a Europa League spot at the very minimum. And I don't think the Champions League race is going to tip. I do think Juventus are going to get in the end, but I think Atalanta's, they're going to have their noses in there. I think, at least. All right. I wanted to avoid this. But I'm going to let you have first crack, because then I'm going to unload for several minutes.
So you're saying, well, I could go dip and get a snack at that point?
What do what you need to do? Obviously, Sassuolo, Roma, as you know, tough place to play. But it's just like it was a tough match, and you know, Roma do get the equalizer at the end with Cristante. Point split back and forth, but Sassuolo had been in horrible form. I think they had lost that. They had only gotten a victory in their one of their last six or seven games. I don't remember the number is. And against Roma, they only had one win in the last 17 games because of the late equalizer. That continues to be the case. But what are your thoughts on all of that?
I'm just going to say, holy shit, that match was insane. Obviously, it was pretty much like a game of ping pong back and forth. Both of you guys, the teams attacked very well and defended well. Obviously, Romo got the first goal with Tammy Abraham converting a penalty after a handball. So Roma got the advantage there. And then Sassuolo got two goals in the back of the first half and then one in the early on in the second half.
Both in the second half. The first was in the first minute of the second half, and then there was another one late on.
Yeah, but obviously they go 2-1 up on Roma, and it looked like it would have been game over, but obviously you have Cristante being in the right place at the right time, close to the goal, and was able to find the back of the net, and they salvage a point. Obviously, Roma would probably feel disappointed, especially at how poor Sassuolo have been in over the past few matches. But I mean, a point is better than nothing. But it's just one of those things where Roma wish they kind of probably pressed a little bit harder, and so they could have gotten the victory. But I mean, still, a point is a point, and yeah.
Yeah, I think both of these teams should be upset for different reasons. You say point of the point, but it's meaningless to me because obviously a point is better than no points. But that was a game Roma couldn't lose. They had no – it was like one of these situations where you can't lose this game. You cannot – you have to win this game. There's no excuse otherwise because Lazio just won on the weekend. Alonso got a point. Juventus got a point. So Roma's ambitions, for one of the only people who had realistic ambitions about this Roma team, me, the ambition was always going to be, let's get into Europa League. I don't want to be playing in this conference bing bong thing next year. Sorry, I don't know what that was all about. because as I said before, if you're a smaller team, this competition means a lot to you. Bobo Glint means a lot to you. Union Berlin, it means a lot to you. If you're a smaller team in a smaller league even, and you have a chance to go win this thing, I think you take a lot of pride in that. You take a lot of there's reasons to be optimistic and reasons to feel good about winning a trophy like that. For Roma, it doesn't mean anything because Roma has higher expectations. Roma's a big club. Roma's in one of the best leagues in the world. We would rather not. It's not like we'd rather not win this. I would rather win it than not win it. But it doesn't really mean anything to us because we have bigger goals in mind. Where for other teams that are smaller, they might see this as an opportunity to win something. For Roma, Roma do not want to be in this ridiculous competition another year. And the way the form is going, if it continues, the Europa League football is running further and further away from our reach again. There's still plenty of time left to make it back, but now I think they're 3 or 4 points behind the Europa League spots. It's just a difficult situation. And then Sassuolo. People aren't talking about this. They're closer to the relegation zone than Europe. They're not that many points off of it. And they had the game in their grasp. It was in their hands. This is the only thing they had to do. Mark Cristante on the corner kick. He was almost unmarked. The ball was perfectly put in there. He ticks it in the back of the net. You know, again, I'm happy we didn't lose, but Sassuolo, just mark the dude and you win the game. You get 3 points. You strive. You jump step, not say jumping over anybody, but you jump forward away from the death zone, the drop zone. All you had to do was mark the guy. Because the game was theirs. They were the better team in this game. They outplayed Roma, and they deserved to win the game. You did all that work and got 1 point out of it. So for Roma, obviously Roma are grateful that they even got 1 point, where Sassuolo should be like, how the fuck did we not get all 3 points? That's what they got to be thinking leaving the stadium, because they're at home. They had good atmosphere. They were tough to play. They did everything they were supposed to do. They came from behind, and they were 2-1 up very quickly, and then boom, they let the whole thing slip. On the other hand, I'm happy Tammy Abraham scored his 18th goal of the season. He better make the World Cup squad. It would be ridiculous at this point. I think he's the highest scoring player in English nationality. On the other hand, Pellegrini was back into the team, did some nice things, but it was brutal. Again, just like the last few games, it's not about creating the chances. There wasn't a lot of service in this game, but Roma always create enough chances to win the game. The problem is putting it into the back of the net or putting your pressure on the goalkeeper. Roma didn't really put a lot of pressure on the goalkeeper. And they couldn't, they only had two shots on target. And I think those were the only two goals. So we very rarely ask Concili to make a big play. We ruined ourselves by taking, you know, it's not even the quality of shots. We just have to be better in front of goal. And that's the big issue. Again, there's a lot of good players in this team. Pellegrini, Abraham, Olivero, Zaniolo when he's on, Felix Afina. I mean, there's a lot of talent here. And, you know, again, the thing that I think a lot of people aren't really assessing, there's two things. Zaniolo is not having a good season. Stop telling people that he's our best player. He's probably not even a top three player in Roma this season. He's struggling. He's had some good performances, but top to bottom this season, he's not been. And not, I don't expect him to be because he's coming off injuries. But stop hyping this guy up and do not fucking call his agent. Block his number. Do not give this guy a contract. Again, with all due respect, he's a huge talent. He's got a deal expiring in 2024, not 2023. Wait, hold your fucking horses and wait when it's deserved or earned. That's number one. Number two, in the midfield in this game, it was Hendrik Mkhitaryan against the world. That's what it felt like, because Pellegrini did some nice things, but he's coming off an injury. He was the only one that showed any sort of like really great creativity, and he did everything he could in that game. It was a bad performance start to finish. It was bad, you know, it was what it was. But Mkhitaryan did great. Now, this is the issue with the whole contract situation. Zaniolo, they want to give him a new contract with a pay raise, yet they're not willing to extend Mkhitaryan's contract, who's a far better player than Zaniolo at this moment. If you let this dude walk, I'm going to be so furious, just because I'm not saying he's the sexiest player. He is 32 years of age. I think he just turned, he might be even 33, but give him an extension and don't worry about paying Zaniolo. When we do contract extension, you're paying for what you're getting. And if the contract that you currently have isn't being evaluated, then you extend the contract. You want to keep him here longer. He's not playing up to standards. He should not be rewarded for playing mediocre football for most of the season. So that's, and then here's the final point. Again, Mourinho, the thing with Mourinho is this is it. It's not that he deserves to be fired. It's not that he deserves to be sacked. There's a lot of other issues with the club, but he's gotten things wrong repeatedly lately. And on top of that, it's not a matter of, oh, he shouldn't be or should be. He's not the right person to be leading this young core into the future. Mourinho, we got a version of Mourinho that wasn't 2010 Inter, wasn't the Real Madrid team that knocked off Pep's Barca, wasn't even, you know, Man United was a better version of Mourinho than we got, and Spurs kind of the same, and he is benefiting, and he's getting Tammy Abraham and Pellegrini and others. He's individually improving them, but the thing is, this is not working out. We need a manager that we'll bring in and give time to, because this is a team that is going to take time. There's a lot of quality in here, and it just has to be folded in the right direction. Not extending Mkhitaryan's contract, that's Mourinho. Bring in Xhaka this summer instead of Boubacar Kamara, that's Mourinho. What Mourinho is doing with this Roma team, it's just not working. And even though he's not done anything wrong necessarily, he's just not the right person for that. And it's disappointing because there's a lot of expectations and the hype that I fully bought as well. But I just don't think he's the right person anymore. That doesn't mean he's a bad manager, but we need someone with new innovative ideas, not someone whose style of play was more catered to many years ago. He's just not the manager he once was. I'm not saying he's a dinosaur, but I'm just not sure. I'm not certain that Mourinho with this Roma team is the right call. I don't think he should be sacked in the middle of the season. There's a lot of things I don't think. I don't think necessarily he deserves to be sacked next year. But Thiago Pinto in the sporting director position needs to start looking for the right person for this Roma job, because it's not Mourinho. As much as we were in love with the idea of Mourinho coming back and coming back to Rome and getting them a trophy, I just don't see it happening with him. And I think we need to start to have realistic, honest conversations about this. Doesn't mean he needs to be sacked, but he's not the right person for this job. And I think that's been clear over the last few weeks. And I think that's just something that needs to be, we have to be more honest about that. And I love Mourinho. He's one of the greatest managers of all time, but I think his juju has run out. Any thoughts about what I just said, and then we'll move on.
No, but did you see the Jose Mourinho Valentine?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, you're my special one.
I like the Donnarumma one better, though.
I love them all. They're absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, the Vladovic one was good, too.
Yeah.
I want to do something. All right, I think we're going to view this very differently, so I'm going to let you make an error of your ways, and I'm just going to correct you. Sorry, just kidding. I'm just trying to have fun.
Man, why are you all while roaming under the bus? Like, what the fuck?
Sorry.
You know what? You just get to go first just so I don't have to deal with you correcting my ass.
This is your team. I'm just joking. Just what were your thoughts in the game? And then I'll see if we agree or not.
Oh my god. I'm surprised I didn't grab alcohol. But it was terrible. We were very, I guess I'm gonna say reserved in the match. Like, we weren't playing with it. Like I said, the issue so far with Inter with some of the stuff is their lack of aggressiveness on the ball and maintaining the possession. Obviously, sometimes, as we discussed, possession really isn't everything, but sometimes it does. And this is one of the situations where not having the hold of the ball really costs us. Oh, I hear you laughing already.
Let's just continue.
Oh. I don't know if I want to continue to base on this ball.
No, I want to hear from your perspective, because it is totally okay for us to not be on the same page. You can watch. The thing is, there's lots of times where a person will watch a game and another person watch the game, and it's like it's not even the same game because of how someone views it. It's a different perspective. I'll explain mine in a minute, but just talk about the whole thing. I mean, just continue talking about it.
But yeah, it was just terrible. We barely could finish any of our chances, or the chances that we did have, they were barely non-existent. Liverpool definitely played with that aggression, and it played out in their favor. they dominated in the scoring opportunities and were able to convert those chances, two of those chances, which saw Inter losing the match. The first one came from Firmino, and then later on, before the match ended, you had a goal from Mohamed Salah, who you would expect to find the back of the net with no issues. And then there was also, on the other side of the coin, there was a lot of defensive mistakes. You left Firmino wide open to close to the goal, which he was able to tap the ball in, and it was hard for him. I mean, at that point, it would be hard for Handanovic to stop anyways because it was that close.
No, actually,
then you had
the first goal. He's not saving that. I mean, as much as you want to say, oh, you know, he could have done better, but no. Wait, hold on, I hear my voice.
Wait, can you hear it now?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that.
You just make sure to cut that bit when you do it, or I'll do it, whatever. Anyway, continue.
But yeah, there was no way Handanovic could have saved that. And so it was obvious that Liverpool went one up, right? That would have gone one up based on that situation alone. Then you have Salah unmarked. I can't remember who assisted his goal.
That was awful. The second goal was terrible.
Yeah. And
thanks, Jacko.
Right now, I mean,
it's fascinating to me because Jacko saved you in the first game, and he's also the reason that Liverpool won 2-0 instead of 1-0.
It was like, then you had Salah finding that the right amount of pressure on the ball and launched it into the goal. I mean, there was also defensive mistakes along with the lack of aggression in the attack and the finishing. But I mean, literally my heart kind of broke in half. And I have a friend who's like my sister. Her name is Bernie. And her main club is Aston Villa, but she has a respect for Liverpool because of her dad. So she was obviously supporting her Liverpool. But she was at least nice. She says, I feel bad for you, but I don't hate you, though. thank you. Because her and I are really nice to each other. I'm like, even if it was the other way around, I wouldn't have rubbed it in her face because we're both nice to each other. So at least that was heartening. But other than that, it was just a total shit show.
Okay, before I launch, I want to remind you of something. What have we always said about Nicola Barella? What's the phrase we always use?
Crybaby.
And hothead, right?
Yep.
He wasn't in the starting lineup. He wasn't on the bench. Do you know why he wasn't on the bench?
Suspension.
Because he got a fucking stupid red card against Real Madrid. And it's just like, because I heard Klopp saying so many nice things about, I thought Klopp in his pre-game press conference was very complimentary of Inter in lots of ways, but was really saying the praises of Nicola Barella, as he's been a big fan of his for many years. But I kept thinking to myself, why isn't he playing? Did he get injured? I know I just saw him play not that long, earlier this week. And then I went back to the Real Madrid game. He got a straight red card against Real Madrid in what was a more or less meaningless game. And now he's not involved. So it's a tough situation to go into. It's an antagonizing situation to go into. And Vidal has his moments, certainly. But you just don't have the dynamism that you need in the midfield to not even control, to be able to push back against a really strong Liverpool team at their best. Inter Milan's whole thing here was you got to get a result at the San Siro because Anfield is not a comfortable place to play in the Champions League, especially. And I thought everything was there for Inter to do what they were expected to do and what they should have done. But the whole, Andrew Robertson was terrorized Inter for the entire game. He was a nightmare, all game long. But they, for a certain respect, Inter did keep them at face distance. And even though Liverpool had a lot of the ball, and even though Liverpool pushed and got into dangerous areas, we get, you know, all these things happened. Inter weren't in a bad situation. They pushed as well, and when they came forward, they looked dangerous. They came close. Kakan Tonalu, who hit the inside of the post right behind Alisson, which if it's an inch, you know, closer down, that's a goal. So Inter played very well throughout the game, and I don't even think they played badly. They were not good against Napoli. They were much better tonight. But then it was sort of that thing where, all right, when are we going to make this count? Because we're having those chances. They did push and got moments where they could have converted. Lautaro was brutal in front of goal, and I love Lautaro, but he'd not have a good game. Taking him off was the right move. And then you come into these situations where it's late in the game and you're trying to find something out. And it's not the fact they conceded. It's the fact that they conceded the way they did. The first goal, I don't think you could have done anything about that. Because if you watch it in slow motion, Bastoni gets right there with Firmino immediately. He's not unmarked. He is not surrounded. And again, Bastoni is shorter than Firmino, so it's a difficult one. But he got there. He got there immediately to try to do something. But by the time Firmino's head touched the ball, it was too late. But it's not like there weren't resistance on that play. And then the second one was just dumb. I mean, Dzeko, stop trying to be clever. If you're going to clear the ball out, send it to the other side of the stadium. Kick it out of bounds. Do something. You hit it with very light power, and it just ends up falling into Salah's lap. And then he cuts in, and boom. And also, Handanovic got to do better on that. He didn't even move. It was like a statue, and he just stung it in the back of the net. Liverpool get their second goal, and now, you know, this is in serious trouble. But all things considered, from start to finish, Inter did not play a bad game. They just missed the train. They had an opportunity to get a goal with Kanalu, who missed barely, and they had a few they had several chances before Liverpool got their moment. And you can't wait that long. You can't hold it off till the end, because Liverpool is the type of team that is experienced in this competition. This team has been to two Champions League finals in the last 5 years. They're going to get in their moments, and eventually they're going to convert on them. And Inter were just on the wrong side of that. All right. So obviously not ideal. Anfield, second leg. Number one, do you think it's over? And secondly, what should be the game plan at Anfield in front of those crazy fans?
Do I think it's over? I mean, part of me holds hope, but in my gut, realistically, I think it is over for us, because Liverpool at home are very, very dangerous. And having their fans available to them, it's not kind of one of those atmospheres you want to go to. And so based on how they're probably going to play this, they may try to tack on maybe one more goal and then just park the bus, since they've already got the two goals already. So maybe just putting that one little final nail in the coffin and then just parking the bus, the rest of the match will do it for them. But if Inter do want to get back into this somehow, they're going to need to work on finishing those chances and also not, like, make so many defensive mistakes. And Dzeko, like Elliot said, don't be clever. Anybody who decides to clear the ball, kick it as far away from your opponents as possible, or else you could be playing right into their trap and be right where they want you to be. So they're going to need to play more skillful, I guess, skillfully, I guess I'm going to use as a word, and just be more aggressive in certain areas.
Right. No, 100%. But I'm talking about, obviously, those you're highlighting things that you need to improve on. But okay, let's just fast forward. It's game time at Anfield. It's Inter. How should they approach attacking Liverpool? What from you? I mean, you watch Inzaghi's football every week. What's the best bet about doing that? What do you think the approach should be?
Well, in my case, it would be changing up the formation, but obviously we all know that's not going to happen with Simeone and Zaki. But I would say, I'm trying to figure out our weakest link right now in the defense. I think De Bruyne has been a little bit of a liability recently. So I would probably alternate him for maybe D'Ambrosio. Just to like see how he performs, and then if needed, then bring on De Bruyne. But I would work on maybe switching up the back three, because De Bruyne, I'm not the only one who's noticed this, it's a bunch of other Inter fans, that he's become a little bit of a liability lately. So maybe if you swap him out for somebody else, it could possibly help. But like I said, if it was me, I would have been changing up the formation. But obviously, with that scenario, it's not going to happen. But midfield, obviously, if since we play with the wing backs, if there's more of a, obviously we have a lot of more attacking minded wing backs, but if the need arises, tell them to drop back and provide some extra defensive help. Because I've noticed that too, where the wingbacks are pushing more up front with the attack instead of, like, at times dropping back where they are mostly needed in certain scenarios. So, or if you're going to do it, maybe have one of the wingbacks, like, say, I mean, this is an example, but obviously it might not be his actual position. But like, say Perisic is playing wing back for the day.
Mm-hmm.
Say if you need extra defensive help, keep the other wing back up in the attack while dropping Perisic back to a more defensive role. So that way you get the extra manpower in the back. But I mean, just tactic wise, that would be one of the better scenarios. Because I, like I said, I've noticed a lot more when it comes to our wing back positions that they play more of an attacking role instead of being able to drop back like they're supposed to in certain cases.
Right. No, I get that. That's a good strategy to win the game. But we're past winning the game. You need two goals. So given that constellation, the thing is, yeah, so you cannot play – it's a difficult one because you don't want to risk yourself. But if you don't risk and you just sit and wait for an opportunity, it's probably not coming. And it's a difficult situation because I think the formation should change as well. Wait, real quick, is Carrera available? Will he be by –
What's Hold the on. Date?
The second leg is on March 8th.
Based on from what I'm reading on a bunch, the transfer market with his injury status, he said he should be available possibly by not this weekend, but the week of the 26th, we might see him, but it all depends on how things go. But if it's a go and he's able to play, then he should be available for that match.
Okay, so I'll give you some perspective here. Playing a back three at Anfield is not a, it's a difficult situation to put yourself into. When Roma did it, they lost 5-2 and it was 5-0 before we scored. So you're going to be in a dangerous position regardless. But this is how you do it. Dzeko in the middle, Carrera and Lautaro on the outside. You push Hakan Çalhanoğlu to the left, Perisic on the other side, and then in the middle you have Barella and Brozovic. You have them stay back but push together. And then back three. He's not going to go to a back four. We know he's not going to go to a back four. And but going for a back four just isn't going to solve the problem. What you need to do, hold on, just real quick. You know that Bayern Munich lost this weekend against a team in 11th, right, in the Bundesliga? I'm sure you heard about it somewhere, right?
Yes, I did.
Do you know why they lost?
Why?
Do you know why teams like Augsburg, Bochum, Frankfurt. Do you know why teams like this can beat Bayern Munich? Because they play with no fear. This is basically the illusion you put yourself in when you play against a team like this. And I'm bringing Bayern Munich up for a reason, and you'll see in a second. When teams, you know, when these Bundesliga teams know they're not, they don't have the better players, they don't have the better team, they don't have the better coaches. So the best way to get Bayern Munich is to catch them off guard. And how do you catch him off guard? You press. You press forward, and you live and die with the decision. If it works, you beat fucking Bayern Munich. If it doesn't, they beat you 6-0. Because in the previous match, in that Bundesliga match, like the earlier this season, they lost 6-0. The second mean they beat him 4-2. So what an Inter need to do, set up a very attacking-minded formation, and do not wait for Liverpool to make the first move. What Inter need to do is press them, because they're expecting you to try to sit back and hit them on the counter. Don't let them, you know, that's what probably they're going to think they're going to do. What Inter Milan need to do is just push and push and push and hit them, press them. And I know that's dangerous, but it's two goals. You can't sit back and defend. You have to hit them. You have to hit them at every single possible moment. And if you press forward, you get an early goal. If it's like the 15th minute, you score. Totally different game, because you just need a goal. Then you get yourself a second goal if you can, and then you change the adjustment. Then you sit. Then you try to close them off with great defense. But I just don't think you can go up there with a defensive attitude and win this game. I do not think it's over. I think you got a shot, but it has to be perfected strategically. And Inzaghi's not going to change his formation. And I'm not sure he should, because it's too much of a risk in such a short amount of time. Anyway, so there's a chance, but they have to be very aggressive. Carrera coming back is very important. And you just kick him in the mouth when you can and try to just survive. And Barella's back, which is so good, such great news, because he can thread balls from almost anywhere. Again, Anfield is no joke, so it's going to be difficult, but I don't think it's done yet. I think a lot of people saying that it's already done are just being ignorant, because there is the opportunity here, because Inter have an incredibly strong squad, and I think they hit him in the mouth. All right, moving on. PSG... Real Madrid, you watched this game, obviously. Mbappe at the end. What are your thoughts on that? And what are you looking ahead to for the second leg?
That match was, I mean, obviously I watched also the Man City versus Sporting, but we're not talking about that.
You said you've advanced to the quarterfinals. We're not coming back from 5-0 down.
Yeah, so congratulations, Man City, on making it through. Here's your ticket. Now go away. But yeah, so I turned off that match and just focused on the PSG Real Madrid match, which was really exciting. PSG pretty much was pressing them from the start and were playing really aggressive. Obviously, you have what's the name of their keeper? Real Madrid's Courtois.
Yep.
Yeah, Courtois was making save after save after save. because PSG's aggressiveness did not stop. So Inter Milan, take notes. But yeah, you knew at some point, whether it was in the first half or even in stoppage time, which ended up being the scenario, a goal for PSG was coming. And at the very end, last few minutes of the match, I think it was in the like 92nd minute, Mbappe gets a hold of the ball and finds the back of the net. And that goal was a pure beauty and finesse. But yeah, overall, PSG were the stronger side. But shout out to Courtois for pretty much keeping Real Madrid in the match from the get-go, because if Courtois wasn't in goal to make those epic saves, it would have been a different story. But yeah, it was a great match, and I was excited to keep it up with it. And so, yeah, it was a really good match to watch, and good job to Mbappe. And also shout out to Verratti, who was the man of the match.
Okay, great, great. So I was going to bring it up. You told me yesterday that he was man of your match. Obviously, Mbappe's going to get the headlines. He got the man of the match because he scores in 93rd minute, and he's fucking amazing. But, again, Verratti's not a player that gets goals or assists. So – I'm actually very thrilled that you were able to make the distinction. So what I want, explain to me why you thought Verratti was man of the match. I'm just curious what your perspective was on that.
And I'm trying to remember his position though.
He's a defensive midfielder.
Yeah. Based on from what I've seen from him, obviously he doesn't really assist much, but from what I saw, he was really good at choreographing like the chance, like the counterattack for other people to make assists and or make goals of their own. But he was really pretty much the orchestrator. And he also provided the defensive needs when possible, like if Real Madrid got too close to the goal and the keeper wouldn't have been able to stop it, he was right there blocking those opportunities from having any life. So he was pretty much doing a lot in this match. Yes, he may not be known for assists or goals, but he does make his presence known in PSG as being a really strong orchestrator and defender when it's needed.
Yeah, that's bang on. You kind of covered it. I thought Real Madrid kind of went missing for big portions of the game. Benzema couldn't do much. Toni Kroos played pretty well. Luka Modric didn't play well. Vinicius Jr. did nothing. I mean, there's a lot of the Real Madrid team just didn't come together. And I was actually surprised. I thought a team like this with so many Champions League winners inside of it, you would think that they would be in better position and be better. You just thought that they would be more prepared for it. And they weren't. And again, it's not over. I ain't got a clue how this is finishing. PSG was the better team. And this is one of the first games that actually looked like a team together. A lot of stuff happened. There's a lot of back and forth a bit, but PSG were the assertive ones. Someone by the name of Neymar came onto the pitch. Everything changed. His ability to do creative things and to supply the ball into dangerous areas got PSG in those moments at the end of games, and they were really pushing hard at the end. And then obviously big controversy. Okay. Messi misses the penalty. That's fair enough. Again, I think people are missing this from this is everyone thinks Messi played badly. He did not play badly. Mm-hmm. Outside of the penalty miss, he was pretty spectacular. He wasn't man of the match, but he still played fairly well. And I think that's a lot of that's something that people miss from this, because they want to make this about goals and assists and all these things. And they make this Ronaldo thing comparison. But the thing is, they're different players. Messi doesn't need to score and assist to have a very, very good game. And I thought he had a very good game. But Mbappe at the end with that an unbelievable goal to sort of silenced all the Real Madrid fans. I thought was beautiful, because now it's like, it's this whole situation. We want Mbappe, but what if Mbappe knocks you out? but you're still going to want him in some. So it's an interesting dynamic there with a great goal at the end. Verratti was excellent. Donnarumma made enough saves to see themselves keep a clean sheet, and then obviously Courtois saved everything he could. But again, when you have a great player with an individual moment of brilliance like that, you just can't do much. And that's just special from Mbappe and PSG. When I haven't got a clue who's going through, PSG has the momentum, but again, these teams are very close contested. This is the one tie from this whole situation and so on. So we'll see what happens, how this unveils going forward. So our final matches, there was a bit of a shocker. RB Salzburg, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant performance against Bayern Munich. I'll go first on this one. I thought Salzburg played the game so precisely. They pressed. They were aggressive from the beginning. This was a game like, oh Bayern's going to win 4-5-1, whatever. But Salzburg really came to play. They got in that counterattack, and no Manuel Neuer certainly helps. Aaronson gets into a dangerous position, spreads the ball out, boom. Salzburg is in front, and the entire game, they continue to apply the pressure, continue to push forward, continue to do dangerous things. And then, obviously, Bayern Munich fighting back. Lewandowski didn't have a really great game. A lot of the Bayern Munich team weren't at their best. In fact, Salzburg played probably a better performance, and they probably could have scored a second goal if it wasn't for Benjamin Pavard getting in the way of an open goal. This could be very different as we're talking about it. But despite all that, Bayern Munich did not play particularly well, but they do. And the tactical things weren't at the best either, but championship teams do what championship teams do. This is one of the biggest teams in the world, arguably the best team in the world. They always find a way. And this isn't in Munich. And you know they'll be ready for that. But they come forward, Müller to Kingsley Coman, who was breathtaking on the day, gets the goal, was not going to be denied, got in those dangerous spaces, was really effective, and boom, chakalaka, Bayern Munich get back in the game in the 90th minute, get an equalizer, and now they go into the second leg level. And I think Salzburg probably have the same approach. And I think they might be able to give Bayern a game. But now that Bayern has that goal, they'll be able to build on that. And in Munich, it's just going to be a totally, totally different proposition for Salzburg. And it's nothing Salzburg did. They played them unbelievable. It's the fact that Bayern Munich, even in a game they did not play particularly well, comes up with the goal that now puts them in prime position to defend their house at Allianz Arena and finish the job. I do think Salzburg will give them a game, but I do think Bayern Munich, because of that late goal, have a lot of confidence going into it, and they'll close it out.
Yeah, this match was really like you said, it was definitely a shocker. You had Salzburg going one up, I do believe, in the first half, and with that goal from
I know who it is. It's the German striker, a Remy or something. Whatever.
Yeah. So they go one up. They definitely kept pressing them and were playing very aggressive, but obviously you have Bayern, who may not have had the best performance, but dominated in certain areas of the match. And you knew at some point that Bayern was going to score regardless of how they were performing. And then you had that goal from Coman, which proves that, yeah, Bayern could have a off match, but they still managed to deliver when it matters the most. And so now they get to take this match back home and obviously Salzburg are going to be really aggressive with them again, but going into their home stadium, it's going to be a difficult match. But I think Bayern still moves on, but Salzburg will not go down without that fight.
Yeah, I don't think Salzburg is going to get ripped apart. I think, if anything, I think it'll be like a 2-1 victory for Bayern. But just because of the approach, again, why does Bayern Munich lose to Bochum and Augsburg? Because they press them, and it's the thing about they're not expecting you to do that, because logically, like if you just took it at face value, we're going to press. Push everyone forward against Bayern Munich. You're gonna what? that's the thought that comes into your head. Why would you do that? Do you understand what the ammo that this team has? If they catch you out, it's game over. Good night, Irene. So it's something that logically wouldn't make sense. But it's, again, it's like with the Inter thing. It's about the element of surprise. Bayern Munich are prepared for anything, but they're not expecting Salzburg to be so aggressive immediately. And maybe that was the problem with the Inter game earlier today, was maybe they should have been more aggressive in the early parts of that game because they know they're going to Anfield. So I think Salzburg will put up a fight. I don't think they're going to take down Bayern. And I don't think today's performance from them should be any indication that they can't win the Champions League or that they're overrated. I think Bayern Munich is built for this competition, and I still back them to win it. Because you see at the end, Salzburg think they're going to escape one. They had an opportunity for a second goal. Boom, they get the Pavard gets in the way, prevents it. And then late in the game, they score. So now they go into the second leg level and scores, which is – it's going to be a tough one. It really is. But I do think that Bayern Munich are probably hold on to it. But they're not going to wipe them out like many expected today. Next week in the Champions League, we got Chelsea versus Lille, Villarreal against the new-look Juventus, Atletico Madrid, Man United. I really hope Atletico Madrid beats Man United there. Nothing personal. I just think that'd be great. And then one of the most interesting matchups of the round of 16, Benfica against Ajax for the next set of games, and so on. Let's see. I think we'll just call it there. We'll do our other segments on our Serie A show. Thank you for listening, and ciao.